This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bled Dry by Lou Cadle, narrated by Cody Roberts. Chapter 1. They stood around the pyre of invader bodies, talking about the plan for liberating Payson. Sierra had suggested it. Arch was for it. Kurt was willing if everyone else agreed, and only Joan and Pilar were hesitant. Pilar said, "It's a road we've never been down before. It's vigilantism." Arch snorted. "It's not like we can report the problem to the police. There are no police. Or government of any kind, so far as we know," Kelly said. "I know," Pilar said. He sounded sad. "I know it's practical. I'm not arguing that." Sierra knew her dad was troubled by the morality of it. She herself was not. Dev wasn't here. He was awake, but in bed at Kelly's order. Sierra hadn't yet had a chance to visit him this morning. Rudy was reprising his babysitting role, so it was only the grown-ups out here. They all had blankets in hand to put out any sparks that might fly off the burning bodies and set the dry pines ablaze. Not all the hoses in the neighborhood connected end to end would reach out this far from the Quinn pump. Kelly patted Pilar's arm once. She had developed two black eyes overnight, but otherwise seemed fine. Her non-dominant arm had caught the grenade shrapnel, and she said she could still fire a rifle. She waved a patch of smoke away and said, "I still think we need at least a day to plan things more carefully, like deciding how long to wait before we mount a rescue, or how to communicate if we go in from more than one direction. Maybe the walkie-talkie device can reach across town, but we'd have to test it first. If we wait another day, I can go too. Another 2 days, and Dev will probably be okay. That stretches out the defense of this neighborhood even more," Joan said. "I'm a little nervous being left with such a big responsibility if all of the healthy people go to Payson."
"I can shoot better every day," Arch said. "And I will, if I need to."
"I can manage a handgun," Pilar said. "But of course that limits my range. It might be better to leave me here and let Joan go with you."
Sierra said to Kelly, "There's really nothing to plan. I mean, we can plan, but everything we know might have changed since Dev and I were down there. I know where I saw them walking guard duty and when, and Joan knows when they came to our neighborhood for food. But if they've switched it up..."
She shrugged. "That's true. They could be patrolling the woods now," Kelly said. "There might be extra patrols since you shot the child molesters from up there."
Sierra saw Joan wince at the reminder. "Look," she said, buying time, trying to muster her best argument to convince Joan and Pilar that they should attack. Kurt's whistled signal for danger startled them all to silence.
"There's someone coming."
His voice was tense. They all turned to look downhill, but Sierra couldn't see anything.
"I saw the sun glint off metal, chrome or a mirror," Kurt said. "There's a car down there, I'm pretty sure."
"Damn," Arch said.
"Into the woods, everybody."
He reached down to the ankle holster Sierra had forgotten he usually wore, took out a handgun, and gave it to Pilar.
"No safety. Chamber around when you're ready."
Joan headed for the woods near their road. Arch and Pilar melted into the woods across the highway. Sierra ran toward the danger past Kurt, who hissed at her. She turned and said,
"We're the best shots, the only two experienced and not hurt. We need to take point."
"Point,"
she heard him mutter, but he trotted up by her.
"I'll climb this hill before it gets too steep. You go left. Stay hidden behind the trees until we see what's coming, okay? We might need to withdraw and hold the road with all of us together."
Sierra ran at an angle, forward and into the woods, Paysonward, technically downhill of where she'd been standing when she shot the last of the invaders, but in reality, at about the same elevation. She kept moving, weaving through the trees, not stopping but once to listen. No sound of a car engine or tires on asphalt.
She saw them before she heard them, a man and a woman, walking toward her, looking from side to side. One of them carried a white flag, a pillowcase she saw, tied onto a hockey stick. The hominess of the white flag reassured her at a gut level, but her brain told her to be cautious. She waited until they had passed her. She wanted them to get far enough forward that both she and Kurt had a shot at them. When they'd passed her by 20 paces, she called out, "Stop right there!" They stopped, glanced at one another, and the woman, who wasn't carrying the flag, raised her arms overhead.
"We mean you no harm," she said.
"That'd make you the first," Sierra said.
"We're from down the hill. Payson is occupied. We know. We also know you probably were attacked yesterday." "How do you know that?"
"They started with us," the man said, "but they didn't get very far. There are more of us than there were of them." The woman said,
"We were concerned about you. When we saw the next place up the hill, with the burned houses, we grew even more worried. And then we saw the smoke ahead and thought it might be your place burning still. I'm glad to see you're alive."
Sierra glanced down the hill.
"Shut up for a second, would you?"
She wanted to hear if there were more coming up behind them. But a few interminable minutes later, she was certain that if anyone was coming, it was not up the road.
"Is it just you two?"
"It's just us," the man said.
"Why didn't you come up yesterday? We could have used the help, assuming you have guns."
"We have guns at home, but not on us," the woman said.
She sounded nervous to make the admission that she wasn't armed. That, more than anything, decided Sierra.
"Turn around slowly. Look at me."
They did. They looked like any regular people. Worried people. The man said,
"We didn't come yesterday because we were afraid they'd come back to us. Even after it seemed they wouldn't, we were debating what to do. Some wanted to come up. Some didn't."
"Democracy," said the woman. "It's a pain in the ass sometimes. You live in that neighborhood off the National Forest Road? On the opposite side of the highway?"
"Right."
"You shot at my friend."
"Are you the one that left us food?"
"I am,"
Sierra said.
"You said you wanted to be friends, or something of that nature."
"The rifle pointing at us is less than friendly," the man pointed out.
Sierra knew she should march them back to the group.
"Kurt!"
she shouted. A whistle from across the road. He had her back, or her front in this case. She lowered the rifle but did not put the strap over her shoulder.
"I'm Sierra Ash."
"Sierra? Crocker? Are you Pilar Crocker's kid?" the woman asked.
"I am. I dated your dad for a little while. You were like, gosh, 7 years old?"
Was that supposed to make this woman more trustworthy? So, in another lifetime, they'd met? Big deal.
"Why are you here?" "We decided your offer of friendship was worth pursuing, that we need to work together if we can. We can't afford to give away food, or ammunition. We wouldn't ask you to, and we won't either, though some seed exchanges or something like that would be smart," the woman said. "Can I put down my arms for a minute? They're getting tired," she said to the man. "I had no idea it'd hurt to keep them up like this."
Sierra said,
"Go on, but move slowly, and don't go for your pockets or waistband or anything that suggests you're grabbing a gun. You're being watched from the woods, and I'm quick with this rifle."
"Couldn't be many in the woods watching us," the man said, but not in a threatening way. "What are there, 5 houses on your block? 10 adults maximum? If we wanted to invade you, we could, but we don't want to. We want to talk."
The woman said,
"Mostly about the Payson situation for now. Though if you fought off that group, you did well. Maybe there's more than 10 of you?
"I'm not talking troop strength with you," Sierra said.
"I'm young, not stupid."
"We're really not here to do any harm," the woman said.
"I'm Francie. This is Tad. You know my name." Sierra said.
Okay, we're going to keep walking, and I won't shoot you, as long as you don't do anything threatening.
Speaking of aching arms, said Tad, can I put this flag down?
I'd hang on to it if I were you, so everyone can see it as you approach.
They won't shoot us?
Not if I'm here.
And she'd signal as she approached, the whistle that meant hold, be alert, but don't act. Not yet. 15 minutes later, they were all standing by the log. No one was pointing a firearm at Tad and Francie anymore, but only Pilar put his away, or rather, given it back to Arch, who held the gun loosely by his side, barrel down, his rifle now hanging over his good shoulder. The more minutes that passed and nothing bad happened, the less Sierra worried that this was some sort of trick that meant an attack was imminent. But then a suspicious voice in the back of her mind said that it would therefore be a perfect time to attack, just when their level of vigilance had eased off like this. She faced so she could see any movement from downhill in her peripheral vision, and took part in the conversation with only the occasional direct glance at the visitors. Kurt was up the hill several yards, doing the same thing, facing up the highway, though in his case, it might be discomfort with strangers as much as security concerns that put him up there. Nobody had instructed the two of them to do this. They just did it, all of them working as a team without much discussion. Tad knew Joan from community charity work. He was surprised to see her here. Joan explained, "Sierra got us out of town." Sierra glanced at Tad, who raised his eyebrows at her.
"Courageous little thing, aren't you?"
She gave him a disgusted look, but kept herself from saying what she was thinking. "Don't condescend to me, old man."
"I meant it as a compliment," Pilar said. "She's tough and brave."
Sierra didn't see herself as either. She was simply doing what had to be done. Seems like bravery would require a choice. She didn't have one. Kelly said,
"You're pretty brave yourself, walking up here unarmed."
The man shrugged.
"Someone had to."
"I volunteered," Francie said.
"I was drafted," the man said. "But I'm alive so far, so I can't complain."
Kelly was keeping an eye on the pyre, blanket at the ready. The visitors had no questions about it. The bodies hadn't burned much yet, so it was obvious what the fire was.
"They had children with them," Francie said. "Right?"
Kelly said.
"As far as we know, all of them survived. We have one really traumatized little girl, 8 others doing okay, considering what they went through, and one missing. Most of us went out looking again at dawn for him, but we couldn't find him even though we had a name this time to call. They had gotten that from another of the children."
"Good job," Tad said. "I mean, shooting the men without hitting the kids."
Arch said,
"We know what we're doing, and we train a lot."
Tad said,
"So this is all of you?"
Arch snorted at the same time Francie said,
"Tad, you know better than to ask that."
"It's not all of us," Arch said. "Rest assured, we have enough defenders. So what is it you wanted to talk about?"
Francie said,
"We want to see if we can be friends, allies, possibly trade with each other in the future."
Arch said,
"You shot at my son."
"Did we?" said Tad. Sierra said,
"Arch, think of it from their perspective. We were sneaking through the woods with rifles."
"They could have asked who you were."
"Do we ever ask first?" she said.
He gave her a disgusted look.
"At first we did."
"For a split second," Kelly said,
surprising Sierra by taking her side.
"No harm came to him. That's the important thing. Maybe they didn't even want any harm to come to him."
Sierra thought, from the look on Tad's face, that was unlikely. They'd shot to kill, not to frighten, but she would have too. Francie said,
"For what it's worth, which I know isn't much, I apologize. And I like to put it behind us if we can. It won't happen again. I don't want it to happen again on either side.
We'll work out passwords or something, so if we visit you or you visit us, no one will get shot, okay? Will you accept the apology?
Grudgingly, Arch nodded. Francie said,
Okay, so right now, we need to talk about Payson.
I'm glad you're up here, Tad said to Joan. You can tell us what went on there. We know a little, and we've guessed at more. But I'd like to hear it all from an eyewitness.
For 20 minutes, Joan told the story of Payson. First, the assumption things would go back to normal. Then the realization that food was a serious problem. That changed the way everything worked. That changed people. Social decay expanded daily. Looting, theft, and panic over food.
I didn't think it'd get any lower than that. To see neighbors turn into thieves and... worse. People turning on friends and neighbors. And the scams? Early on, we had several older people from the church approached about donating cans of food, and a few of them did, thinking it was for hungry children.
It wasn't. She made a face. But then we thought, by we I meant the better people, the civic leaders and clergy and school principals and so on. We thought we were getting a handle on it. Punishment for the theft of food became very harsh. First exile, and then execution. And I know that bothered some of us at first. It bothered me. But there was a public hearing before it came. Some rule of law. I do have to give them that. And then the Phoenix invaders came. I mean, this group that is there now. There were other gangs that came through first, but they were driven off with minimal damage to us.
Up here, in at least one case.
Sierra couldn't hold on to that resentment of Paysonites if they were to move forward. No more than Arch could hold on to his about Dev getting fired at by these people. The people in Payson were only doing what she and her neighbors had done here. Get rid of the bad guys. Kill them or drive them on. That they became someone else's problem a short while later hadn't even crossed her mind once. So she could hardly fault the people of town for doing the same thing. Joan continued her story. The invaders came, organized, well-armed, though she couldn't say how many. The Payson folks were low on ammunition by that point. The invaders zeroed in on men at first, killing, capturing, using them as hostages, so that families would quit fighting. And then they'd killed any belligerent women. They'd raped. Most young, single women had fled town, like Sierra's friend Mia. And then at least two of the invaders had started in on raping Emily. By that point, everyone was cut off from news, so she couldn't swear if that was widespread or an isolated incident.
We have a suspicion that some of them might be Phoenix police, Arch said to Francie and Tad. Maybe only one, and could be he's over there.
He pointed an elbow toward the burning bodies. Tad's head snapped to Arch.
Why do you say that? We found some evidence.
Sierra noticed he wasn't sharing any information about the grenades.
That's funny, said Tad. We have someone in the neighborhood, an older fellow, a retired statey from Maine, who said the same thing. Just a hunch on his part, though.
Francie said, This is the kind of thing we can share. Information costs us nothing. Right?
You know, Tad said, This alliance will benefit you more than us, really. There's more of us, more gardens, and probably more experts. We have someone who knows how to graft fruit trees. We have a master carpenter, a welder.
They all looked up, exchanging glances at that. The Morrow turbine would take an expert welder to repair. Kelly said, Do you have a doctor?
Not a one, Francie said.
Any of you?
No. I did EMT training years ago, said Kelly. Almost 20 years. And I didn't do the job long. 9 months is all.
Sierra hadn't known that.
And I have some reference books, but that's it.
We have a vet's assistant who can stitch, Francie said.
And a dental assistant who knows some physiology. A handful of first aid manuals.
She half smiled.
So I guess our teeth will get cleaned if we want.
Tad said,
I was looking forward to not having to go to the dentist, one of the few positives of all this. He chuckled, but no one else laughed with him. Kelly said, You get an abscess. You won't feel like that. It could kill you if left untreated. Francie said, I guess you'll have to learn to pull teeth. The dental assistant, I mean.
But what will we do about Payson? Arch said. We've been talking that over this morning among ourselves. I don't like the idea of them down there, however many there are, and ready and willing to send out groups of attackers our way.
Tad said, That's part of what we're here to discuss.
Arch glanced at Sierra.
We had a thought.
Which was?
Tad said.
We were going to do guerrilla-style raids, or more raids, as we already got a couple of them that way.
And he gave Sierra a nod.
Sniper work. Take a few more of them out without much of a risk to us. Hit, then retreat fast.
Surely at some point there will be few enough of them left that the town will rebel,
Jones said.
Not that we'll be in great shape after the rebellion in town. Food will still be a major concern.
She made a face.
Though maybe less so after considering all who have died.
At least Payson is a lot warmer now than it was when I was young, Francie said. There's still time enough for a second planting and harvest this year. Maybe not of tomatoes and corn and peppers, but everything else. Radishes, carrots, beets, and all kinds of greens can be grown right up until first frost. We're planning on digging up and starting all over in mid-August.
Kelly nodded.
Us too.
Also, there's that neighborhood we passed. The burned-out one? Tad said. They have gardens.
A handful of Paysonites could move up there, said Joan.
We'd have to liberate them first, Arch said.
Joan said, It'd be nice to let some people in Payson who live in apartments have them. Apartment living gives you nothing but public gardening space, and even though we had things getting better there before this group of invaders arrived, filching from public gardens was still a problem. Before the invaders, we were talking about giving empty homes to people, but some were opposed to it, said it was illegal.
Is this really what we want to do?
Kurt called from his lookout spot.
Again, I'll remind you that while they might be grateful when we free them, when they run out of food, we're still up here, with gardens and other food sources.
Joan said,
We'll have to negotiate something.
And enforce it how?
Kurt said.
We could make sure they aren't left many guns,
Tad said.
That way, even if they want to come up to our place, which is closer, or yours, they'll have to do it with sticks and stones.
Arch nodded.
Maybe that is the way to do it. They won't like it, though. Whatever we decide, the guerrilla action does seem like the best way to start. We can cull the numbers. Then either we take them out, or the town itself rebels and does it. And when we go down, we'll see what has changed, if anything, down there.
Francie said, So you all were going to do that on your own?
Me, said Sierra, and Kurt, if we go tomorrow.
Well, we can at least add to that number,
Tad said to Francie.
We'll have to discuss it first.
The problem with that arrangement, Arch said, is that if you know we're down to fewer fighters when it happens, and you know when, that's when you could invade us.
Francie said, We aren't going to do that, I promise you. Look, we have all we need to survive. Barely enough, but enough. We discuss all the time how rare that probability is in the whole country. We aren't feeling greedy. We're feeling grateful. We'll be perfectly okay on our own, and we don't need to steal what you have.
We don't actually need your houses or food or ammunition, said Tad. Well, ammunition, yeah, of course. That's going to run out first, but Francie is right. We can promise that we won't steal yours. There are other weapons after ammunition is gone, Kurt said, turning back halfway to make his voice easier to hear. More primitive ones. Maces, flails, trebuchets and rocks, spears.
All of those can be made and replaced without a whole manufacturing infrastructure needed.
Francie nodded. We said the same thing. Our carpenter is working on bows, but no one is great with a bow.
Kelly said,
Arch is, and our son, they bow hunt. There you go, see? We can help each other, Francie said. But my vote about that will be, not until we get pace and set right. We can't rest until that threat is eliminated. I'm not saying there will never be other threats, there will be, I'm afraid. But this is the big one.
I'd like to do that too, Joan said. It's my town. My congregation is still there, the ones who've lived through this. I feel a duty to them.
It was the first Sierra had heard her express such a sentiment, she said.
Then the quicker we act, the better,
Kelly said.
We have a couple injuries. If we waited 2 days, we could commit more people. If we waited 2 weeks, we'd all be well.
We need to know more about Payson, Tad said. You said earlier you guessed 50 invaders, Joan? But if they committed 20 to come up here, I'm guessing it's far more. They may also have sent another 20 up the other highway, Arch said. I can't see how they could have known about us in particular. So they must have fanned out. I agree. There must have been more like 200 of them, or even more.
We're not invading Payson ourselves, right? Joan said. We're talking about liberation.
Pilar said, We wouldn't be invading. We'd give Paysonites the town back and then retreat. None of us would want to move there, would we? For many reasons.
Sierra knew Kelly had made a good point, that sending even 5 people away to attack could be deadly for their own group, leaving too few to defend their homes. But in the long run, it would be better for them to have those invaders out of Payson, and they needed to get those kids back to their real caretakers, those responsible for feeding them. She wanted the strangers to leave so they could talk about it among themselves. A loud pop startled everyone. Guns were coming up as they all turned, but Kelly said,
No danger, just a log popping in the fire.
Sierra blew out her breath. Man, she had let her guard down. But then, nothing had happened as a result. Still, she took a minute to scan the woods, looking for movement, for someone sneaking up on them. Even if Francie and Tad weren't a distraction before an attack, the smoke from the pyre might draw someone else, someone far more angry and dangerous than those two. Francie said,
I don't know what others will say. Lately, life seems more precious than ever. Should we risk going into Payson for someone else's benefit? That's going to be an argument a few will make, have made, even about coming up here.
Tad said, True. But we're not going to solve this yet. We've made contact. That's good enough for now. We know that what to do about Payson should be decided on first, before we set up trade between our two groups. We need to discuss this with our people, and then we can meet later. A few people from each side and report on what we've decided. Maybe we can get a ride to our car now? Tad said.
Don't be lazy, Francie said to him. We can walk back.
Pilar said. When and where do we next meet?
The sooner the better, Sierra said.
At dawn in 2 days then, in that burned neighborhood on the road, Tad said. 3 to talk from each side. All right?
Sierra said.
We should come prepared to fight if we decide to raid Payson, or run a recon mission.
Francie said,
As long as we can get consensus from our neighbors.
But I think we can. Some have been itching to take action before this. But 2 days is right. It'll take a full day to argue it through.
Sierra and her dad walked partway down the hill with them. Sierra noticed and wondered if they did, Arch trailing behind.
Good seeing you again, Francie. Pilar said, as they split apart. And you, she said, turning around to walk backward and face him. This winter we'll be able to sit down and share a beer.
I'll have to dig out my home brew equipment and make some for that to happen, Pilar said.
But there's another good thing you have that you can share. Beer and trade for welding.
I hadn't considered it until this moment, but sure, we can probably work a deal on that.
And the strangers left,
walking the rest of the way to the car alone. Arch waited until they were beyond the curve, and then passed Sierra and her dad coming back, and trailed them. Good, thought Sierra. They might be only what they seemed, but there was no reason to trust them yet. What do you think? Sierra said to her father, as they approached the others. Kelly was attending to the pyre. Kurt was still facing uphill. Pilar said, I think it's the best situation we can hope for, and I think you shouldn't be the one to do any sniper work, not if they have 20 skilled marksmen. Let them all go. We have to pull our weight, and it should be Kurt and me if we do it soon, she said. No way you're running around in the woods and throwing yourself down on the ground, not with your ribs so sore. He made a face. I hate to say it, but you're right. I'm getting better, but not that fast. Joan said, Have you remembered how you fell yet? Kelly said it might come back in time. No, I've remembered more about that day, though it wasn't really a remarkable day at all, so it's hard to know if I'm filling in from other days or not. But not how I fell, not even climbing. It doesn't even make sense. I've checked the harness and it's working, but I have a backup and I'll be using that next time. Sierra said, You're not going up there again without my watching you. And when this Payson thing is past us, I'm learning to do that stuff too. He said, I'd be too worried for you. Hey, I don't want to fall either. I'll be damned careful. And not about that. Or, yes, about that too. I meant about you shooting people down in Payson. I won't take chances there either. I'll stick with Kurt, and he'll keep me from jumping into things you wouldn't like me jumping into. Mounting your horse and riding off in all directions. He smiled sadly. You ever hear that one? Nope. It's good. I get what it means. But I think the better analogy would be that I tend to spur my horse before the captain yells charge. As long as you know you do it, then you can stop doing it. He put an arm around her. Right? I'll try. Try very hard. Please. I will. Promise. I think I need to go pick tomatoes and gather eggs and cook. Crazy, eh? That stuff like that needs to be gotten out of the way first? Her father said, I'm going to help Joan look for the missing kid one more time. Then we need to talk later, you and me. But until then, my child, remember, that simple stuff, like tending to eggs and vegetables, is the whole point of what we're doing. The shooting is not the goal. It's the means to achieve it. Chapter 2 After Sierra had gardened, cooked, stood her watch, cleaned the kitchen, and made sure none of the recent canning jars had lost their seals, she walked over to Jones to see if she needed help with a dozen kids. She had heard the sounds of them playing this morning, which seemed a good sign they were recovering. They were outside, as Sierra approached the property. Even the little girl who had been so shocked when Sierra carried her to the Quinn house was with them. Rudy was singing and clapping his hands, and they were doing a circle dance. Rudy's voice was high and clear, and the kids were enjoying themselves, even one who clearly had no sense of rhythm or dance talent, who kept running into his neighbors, but giggling about it. Sierra was amazed they were so resilient. Either that, or Rudy was damned good at babysitting. Joan was on the back deck. Hi, she said. You any good at sewing? Not at all. Kelly is who you'd have to ask. Can you sew a hem? About that much, but it'd be ugly. Here. She handed over a pair of shorts. I got these from your dad. They were yours, years ago. Sierra didn't recall them, but she wouldn't. Clothes hadn't ever been terribly important to her, certainly not when she'd been this size. She held up the shorts. For the kids? Yeah, they are filthy. And tonight I'm having them all sleep in the underwear t-shirts that were here so I can get the rest of the clothes they have on washed. Mitch's clothes. Sierra felt a pang, missing the old man, his kindness and his wisdom. Do you need help with laundry? Or our washer? She shook her head.
As long as it stays sunny, there's enough electricity to run a couple of loads, your dad said. He checked my batteries for me. I'll hang them on a line to dry. Sierra took up the offered needle and thread. The shorts were already pinned up at the point they should be hemmed. How are you doing on food? Pilar and I just canned if you need anything. I'm okay for now, thanks to you all bringing back the food that was here before. Do you need us to take a few of the children? It must be crowded here, and I can sleep on our sofa and let two or three have my room. It is crowded, but I think it's better for them to stay together. And Rudy is really good with them. I'm surprised how good. Rudy was teaching them another circle dance. How he'd learned them, being schooled at home, she had no idea. He seems to have the knack, Sierra said. Did you see any sign of the missing kid? No. I guess we have to give up. I hope he's safe wherever he is. Maybe he found his way back to Payson. It's a long way. I can't help but think 6 months ago, no expense or effort would have been spared to find him. But now, she shook her head. I can't keep at it forever. I wonder if any of them have parents still alive. I hope so. We have food enough now, but... Sierra didn't finish the thought. I know. But if we do decide to do something about Payson, to liberate it, then they can go home. If they have homes still, parents, I guess I could take in one or two permanently. I might have to expand the garden to feed five. Yeah. Sierra didn't make the same offer. Taking two temporarily was one thing, but she didn't want the responsibility forever. It might be cold-hearted of her, and she wouldn't begrudge a child a week or two worth of food, but she didn't want to have to worry about babysitting or teaching. Rudy might have the knack. She didn't. A thought struck her. You know, what we should do is take pictures of them, put their names on them. Then when we meet the other neighborhood, I can take those and see if any of that group is related. You're going to that meeting? Sierra had assumed she would. But now that Joan asked, maybe Arch wouldn't want her. She'd have to work on him later, point out why she'd be a good person to have along. She'd seen the town, the patrols, gotten through the town at night safely. It had been her idea to conduct the guerrilla raids. She'd keep reading. Everything she could find the time to read before the meeting, about guerrilla warfare, and her knowledge would be fresher than anyone's. All good reasons to bring her along. To Joan, she said, maybe I'll go. But anyway, there might be someone in that neighborhood who knows who one of these kids is. I guess. If not, and we do succeed in getting Payson back, I might be able to find a family or two willing to take any orphans in. Really? Sierra would be shocked if that were so. The Paysonites had even less food than they did, and less land to grow it on. I have two couples in my congregation who are wanting to adopt. They might still be wanting that. She frowned. If they're alive. One couple was two men, and I guess they might not have made it. Sierra's sewing wouldn't win any awards, but the hem on one leg was done. She started on the other. Do you want to come along to the meeting with the other group? I'm not a military person. You can learn. I have. I know. She hesitated, and then said, your father is worried about you. We're all worried about each other. I guess that's the cost of caring. I mean about you and your... She trailed off. Not my business. But you should talk to him tonight. Pilar wouldn't hesitate to bring something up that was bothering him. Sierra assumed it was worry about her willingness to act aggressively, to take the initiative, and put herself in harm's way. I will. Good, Joan said. She checked her wristwatch. I have to start dinner. You'd be surprised how much time it takes to fix food for a dozen people. Never tried to do that myself. You need help? You could check for eggs. I've heard cooking isn't your favorite thing. As soon as I finish this really awful job I've done with the sewing, I'll collect eggs for you. Hey, the sewing doesn't need to be perfect. That's good, Sierra said. It definitely isn't. Joan left, and Sierra finished the hem and put the shorts down, then walked to the chicken coop. She glanced back to the main house and saw Emily's face in a window, watching the younger children play. Poor kid. Sierra waved, and Emily put her palm on the window in return. It was more of a response than Sierra had expected. She checked the brooding hen while she was there. The bird seemed contented on her nest. She fussed a little as Sierra sneaked out an egg to Candle, but Sierra had done this many times before in her life, and knew how to move quickly and efficiently, without causing a hen undue stress. She should get one of her own hens sitting, maybe two, if there was any chance at all that these kids were the neighborhoods permanently. They need a lot more eggs and a lot more cockerels to cook up for dinners. The only way to meet that need was to increase the flocks. The trouble came with the space they had for nests. They might also have to build a second coop. Sierra would rather be out there with her rifle, hunting enemies, than worrying over this domestic stuff. But everyone needed to be fed. Chapter 3. When she was done with dishes that evening, more mundane tasks, she went over to the Quinn house to see how Dev was. The sky was still light, though the days were getting shorter. Dev was in his room, in bed. "Hadn't seen the bunk beds," she said, tapping the wood of the top bunk. "I had been sleeping up top, but my mom says not until I'm better." She sat cross-legged on the floor to talk. "How are you feeling?" "A headache, but nothing else."
"Really?"
"A little sore."
"How's my eye look?"
"Like you were drinking all weekend? Or all weekend every weekend of your life? And maybe got in a bar fight Sunday night on top of that?"
"Oh, great. Like a bum, in other words."
"Like a warrior?"
"Some warrior," he said, disgusted. "I'm in bed like a kid with the measles. Even Rudy is probably doing more than I am today."
"Can you remember what happened?"
"Yeah, perfectly well. They hit me and Mom with grenades. Or didn't hit us, but hit the woods right by us. The trees we were using as cover."
"They left their grenades behind?"
"Yeah, my father showed me one. We talked about how to arm it for throwing. He cut one open even."
"Wasn't that dangerous?"
"He knew what he was doing. It was pretty interesting inside. I hope he can figure out what to do with it."
"Braver man than I."
"You're incredibly brave." "Too brave."
She didn't think so.
"I'm doing what has to be done is all. Just like you."
"How's your dad?"
"Healing. On watch right now."
"And the Kershaws?"
"Crowded. I can't imagine 13 people in that house. But they are managing. Rudy seems to be doing great with the kids, though. Emily isn't still talking, I guess. Not even with all those other children around her."
"Yeah. I can't imagine what she's going through."
"I can." She shook her head.
"Well, I guess I can't. I mean, certainly not being 13 and having that happen."
"But you've thought about that kind of thing? Worried about it?"
"Came too close that night Bodhi died." She shrugged. "But every female over 15 or so thinks of being raped, plans what she'd do, knows it's possible. It happens to a lot of women. Maybe it always has throughout history."
He scrubbed at his face. It took her a second to realize he was fighting off tears.
"Dev, what's wrong? Are you in pain?"
"No, I just feel bad."
"I'll get your mom. I saw her in the garden."
She reached out for the edge of the bed to balance herself for standing. He grabbed her wrist.
"No, I'm okay. I feel sick inside. Like, bad in my mind."
"Maybe it's your head injury."
He shook his head.
"No, it's not that. It's what they were doing to Emily."
"Oh."
She settled back on the floor.
"I know. It was awful to see."
He shook his head again, and then reached up to it and rested his hand on the top.
"I have to quit doing that. Shaking my head is the only thing that really hurts." You sure you don't want your mom?
No, definitely not. I want you. I mean, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
It's personal. He was blushing. She felt a little more cautious.
Okay.
His gaze slid from her face and seemed to focus on the far wall. It's about that.
That?
Oh, never mind. I have no idea why I thought I could ask you this.
Go on and ask. Really, whatever it is, it's okay.
She suspected he was going to ask her something romantic. She'd mentally rehearsed her, I like you, but not in that way, answer already, weeks ago, back when he was first teaching her about hunting.
Don't look at me.
Where should I look?
Turn your back.
At least that didn't sound like a romantic proposition was on its way.
Okay.
She scooted around on the floor and faced the chest of drawers on the other wall.
Go on.
You know, before all this, he cleared his throat.
Mm-hmm.
She made it an encouraging noise.
Before all this, sometimes, you know, when I...
This time he was silent for so long. It was all she could do not to turn around and look at him.
Okay. When I was, you know, thinking about girls and stuff.
It took her a second.
Are you talking about mass? Don't say it, he said.
She wanted to laugh, but controlled herself.
Okay. I get it. And?
And sometimes I thought about that. You know, doing that with a girl. She said, hoping this was not what he meant.
Forcing her?
No, he said, obviously shocked that she'd even thought that of him.
No, the other, you know, with the mouth and that.
Yeah? Does that make me sick or something?
Oh, Dev,
she said, and she felt so sorry for him, not having guy friends his own age, not having anyone to talk to about this stuff.
No, it's perfectly normal. Can I turn around now?
If you won't look at me like I'm a freak. She did turn, and she gave him a sad smile.
You're not a freak. It's really and truly normal. It's one of the things people do together, after all.
And girls like it?
It can be fun, she said. But only if you want to and like the guy. I mean, nobody wants to be forced to do something they don't want to do. Imagine yourself in Emily's shoes. That'd be really awful, wouldn't it?
I'd bite it off. I swear I would.
I'm not sure that's possible, but maybe you could. In any case, no. You weren't sick to daydream about that.
I'm sorry if I grossed you out.
No.
Or embarrassed you.
It was awkward, and she doubted he'd have brought it up had he not been a little loopy from the explosion.
Hell, Dev, you're embarrassed enough for both of us right now. Compared to you, I'm totally relaxed.
He nodded, and his face grew serious.
Do you think a girl will ever do that with me?
I'm almost 100% sure of it.
You're the only girl I know.
She didn't want to go far down that conversational path. You know, if the plan works out, and if we can liberate Payson, you know about the plan by now, right?
Yeah. I'll be better by then, and I'll be there, I promise.
Then there should still be some girls down there, or girls in that other neighborhood we're meeting with in a couple days. You can go down there again when it's done. Date, even. You'll be showing a girl how to clean a rifle or plant rhubarb or whatever, and she'll look at you and remember you helped save the town, and you'll both feel sparks, and that'll be it. Love among the rhubarb.
What if she's been hurt too, by the invaders, the way Emily was?
then go slow with her. Or let her take the lead. Women and girls get raped, yeah. Too many of us. But we heal, I'm pretty sure. I was pretty freaked out after that guy touched me in the barn. And today, I'm way better. I'm sure it's far worse if something really did happen, or if it happened more than once. But people are pretty resilient. I didn't think so at first, but now I know that I'll get over Bodhi's death one day, and quit feeling so guilty about it. And Emily will talk again one day, and your future girlfriend will want to make love with you. Or I could die a virgin. I hope not. I'd hate for that to happen. I'd hate for you to die, period, virgin or not. I don't want you to die either. I know you don't. You'll be careful, whatever we do, when the shooting starts again. I'll defer to whoever is in charge. And rein in your impatience. And rein myself in. You promise? You sound like Pilar, she said. Yes, I'll be good. I know you'll hit what you shoot at. I'm not worried about that. I hope I can go to keep you out of trouble. As if you could order me around. She was teasing. It was hard to be angry with him when he just bared his soul to her.
Sierra stood.
Anything I can get you before I leave? No, I'm okay. You rest and do what your mother says.
Well, now you sound like my father, except he sounds angry when he says it.
He loves you, Tev. He was really worried when you were unconscious. I wish you could have seen him then.
Mom says he has a hard time showing it to me. If I ever have a kid, I'm not going to be like that.
No. You wouldn't be. You're a more open person by nature.
I am?
Considering the conversation we just had, I'd have to say yes.
He blushed again. I'm sorry if it upset you.
It didn't. You're not a rapist, Dev. You can rest easy about that. And it's normal to think about blowjobs and stuff like that.
She left then, smiling a little to herself. Poor kid. He'd probably been worried about that blowjob thing for days and days. She wondered if he'd regret talking to her about it. His concussion or whatever pills he was taking might have made him talk to her in a way he wouldn't normally. She considered the possibility that she wouldn't survive the meeting with the other neighbors, and that this would be the last private conversation she'd have had with Dev. She thought back over it, and realized she'd been kind to him. And that seemed like a good way to leave things. That thought stopped her in her tracks. She detoured from the path she was taking toward home, and went to join her father on watch. Just in case things in Payson didn't go so well, she wanted their last conversations together to be good ones too. Chapter 4 Her dad was sitting on a piece of tree trunk from the trees that had been blown up the other day. Arch's night vision goggles were around his neck. She said, "You going to be here late enough to need those goggles?" "Sierra? Is something wrong?" He stood. "No, I just wanted to come out and say hi. We haven't talked in a couple of days, it feels like." They had, but she wanted to give him a chance to say whatever it was Joan had hinted that he wanted to say. She expected a lecture on being careful, not taking chances, and staying alive. She could bear listening to that again. She knew it came from a place of love, so she'd sit still for it. I shouldn't have been sitting anyway. You feeling bad? In pain? No. No worse than I have been. I've been walking the woods a lot looking for that missing kid. He stretched cautiously. I guess I'll check the road now. I'll go with you. They looked up the road in both directions, seeing nothing. There were no sounds either, except for the evening sounds of songbirds settling in for the night, the first hoots of owls preparing for the hunt, and a faint, angry chatter of a squirrel. "You know what's odd?" she said. "I haven't seen any house cats out there. Just one in a front window in Payson. Think their owners all ate them? Or if they were left to run loose, they got eaten anyway. Coyotes or whatever.
Seen any coyotes close to our road?
No. Saw a fox one morning.
Did you shoot it?
I didn't want to wake everyone up and worry them.
A fox could go for hens or rabbits.
Well, not if we keep everything in good repair.
You didn't want to kill it, did you?
You're an old softy about wildlife.
I am, he said. About all life.
Let's check across the road.
They crossed the highway, passing the pile of charred human bones. She could still feel heat coming off them.
When they cool, we'll have to scatter them.
Scavengers might do that for us. Glad something will get some use of those bastards.
Sierra, he said.
Hmm? He didn't say anything as they walked along, moving through the woods, for at least a minute. She stopped, knowing he wanted to say something, and said,
What?
She wanted him to go ahead and give her the rest of it. She figured it would be something like, Be careful. You're the only child I have. Promise me you won't take risks.
I'm worried.
I know.
About you.
I know. I worry about you, too.
About who you're becoming.
That wasn't what she had expected to hear.
What do you mean?
You're getting so old. You shoot people. You seem to think nothing of it.
Only if they shoot at me first.
And in Payson, the ones who were molesting Emily. They didn't shoot first, did they?
She was getting angry.
And you think I shouldn't have? Shouldn't have stopped that when I could?
I don't know, he said, shocking her.
If someone is raping me, I hope you'll shoot them, she said.
Talk about cold.
I would. I would, to protect you. But I'd regret it.
I don't regret it.
I know. That's what worries me.
Sierra was confused. She didn't expect this. In fact, she expected praise for what she'd done. Praise, gratitude, maybe even admiration.
You don't need to worry. I know what I'm doing.
You feel okay about invading Payson?
Liberating it. Completely. You don't?
I don't.
What? That's crazy. Those guys down there, they're dangerous. And we can't rest as long as they are down there. And they've killed thousands, raped, driven people from their homes. Those aren't good people. They don't deserve to live.
Maybe not, he said. His eyes scanned her face.
I love you so much. I love you, she said, though right now she was irritated with him.
I didn't raise you to be this person.
Of course you did. I only had one real parent.
She really didn't get his point. She could hear the disappointment, the sadness in his voice, could see it in his face. But she didn't understand it, and it was pissing her off more than a little.
I'm the same woman you raised.
I didn't raise you to be a killer.
The world has changed. I'm defending our home, our food, our neighbors, and you.
Shh, I know that. The men whose bodies we just burned, they were attacking us.
That's right.
I know that. But the men in Payson weren't attacking you.
They were attacking a defenseless girl. I don't see the difference.
But there is a difference. And now you want to go be a sniper and shoot some who are only walking the streets.
That's right, I do.
Because they might come up here and hurt us.
They did come up here and tried to kill us. That's them we burned today.
She pointed back to the road. Whoever they were.
They had to be those Payson invaders.
Could be.
Doesn't matter. The Payson guys are still the bad guys. I get to kill bad guys.
3 months ago. That wasn't how it was. You never thought of killing anyone.
It's not 3 months ago. It's today.
She was increasingly irritated with him. Whatever idea she'd had to have a nice moment with him, in case it was their last together, had fled. Now she just wanted to slap him. We had police, and juries, and judges. We didn't kill a guy because he tried to rob us.
Arch did.
I know.
And that was wrong. He could have held on to the guy and called the sheriff. I always thought it was wrong, that first one.